Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. As always, we are joined by our super audio producers, Dylan Fagan and Tristan McNeil, names to be announced.
Yeah, I guess we'll have some opportunity during this one. I mean, usually some oddball things come up that, you know, we can slot that that strange odd word that comes in occasionally as a nickname later on, maybe.
Ooh, here's a deep cut.
What's that?
Dylan Burke Fagan and Tristan Hare McNeil.
Oh, I like it. You know what? Perfect fit for this one. Perfect fit, as you'll find out as we comb through this. Now, just kind of a behind-the-curtains look at what's going on here, Ben. This is a news story that's happening right around now, but you know, by the time this airs, of course, it's going to be a few weeks on, so most people will have heard of this already. But it wasn't a widely publicized story that we're going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. It's just a very short couple paragraphs.
Yeah.
But I found it very interesting because of the subject matter. So, for a couple of reasons. Two reasons. One, it's automotive related, and that's why we have it here today for our show.
Mm-hmm.
Second is that it kind of ties in with some of my other outside of work interests, you know, like a little true crime bent, you know, that area. And, I don't know, the macabre, I guess, maybe. And there's more to the story than just this short bit that we're going to talk about early on in this podcast. And there's a couple of things I kind of want to get out of the way first. We have a couple of episodes that are Ferrari-related.
Right.
And we haven't yet, and I want to make sure that we make this really clear, we have not yet done an Enzo Ferrari story.
Which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, we haven't done like the Genesis story, the origin story of Ferrari yet, and we will get to that. That's one of the things on our list, and we get emails occasionally about doing something like that. We will. It's a big one we want to get to, but so far we've got maybe four or five podcasts that do mention Ferrari in them in some way, and we've got the case of the buried Ferrari Dino from back in July of last year,
which was great. I enjoyed that one.
I like that one a lot too. It was a good story. And then we've got Sandra West and her Ferrari coffin that we did back in, I think it was back in 2013. And then we also have something about how long does it take to build a Ferrari, because there's some confusion over whether they're still entirely hand-built or there's some machines involved. And that goes back to 2012. And then we also have something about the Ferrari FF, because that was an unusual Ferrari at the time, which was back in 2011. It was a four-door Ferrari. You remember it had the shooting brake design. But we've got a few here and there that kind of touch on Ferrari, but nothing like what we're going to talk about today, because this is really unusual.
Yes. We also, just for a side note, we did in a past episode, I cannot recall which one right now, we did talk about the infamous Ferrari and Lamborghini rivalry.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And, well, there's that, and then we also talked about the Ford and Ferrari rivalry.
Right.
Rivalry, at Le Mans. Right in the 1960s with Henry Ford II, so there's that confrontation that went on.
So that's just a tease, a taste, a sampling of what you can find. These are all on our website, carstuffshow.com, which is absolutely free. That's my favorite number. my favorite number.
Who isn't a fan of free?
Who is not a fan of free?
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do, Scott, just to set the scene without going too far into a biography of Enzo Ferrari, is just to give some basic background of his life.
Sure.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds fine. But understanding that we're going to go in-depth later.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
So this is just the high-level, quick and dirty. Who's this guy? What did he do? Why does he have that last name, and why does it matter?
Yeah.
All right, so Enzo Ferrari was born in 1898 in Italy, and he is the founder of the Ferrari Automotive Company.
Yeah, that's right. And he didn't start out the founder of the automotive company that we think of, cars. He started out as a racer. And this is when he was, what, about 20 years old? He kind of got the bug and he wanted to do that. I think he came from a family where the family business was carpentry. And the carpentry business kind of went under sometime after World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided that, something that he had had an interest in since he was about 10 years old. I think he went to a Grand Prix race when he was about 10 and kind of caught the bug, you know, got the excitement.
The 1908 Circuit di Bologna.
That's the one, yep. And he had that excitement in him from that point on. But when he was about 20 years old, he decided, I want to really make a go at this. I want to be a race car builder.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what he did, built race cars, and the Ferrari race cars were really the entire reason that the Ferrari street cars came about in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
He had to build street cars in order to finance his racing habits. So so he reluctantly built street cars, and he really at the beginning just built enough just to keep the race shop going, and then eventually, you know, that caught on, and he did that, you know, full on. I mean, he went guns blazing into both, you know, like, yeah. You know, I'm doing the racing program, I'm also going to do the street cars.
And he's really a larger than life character. There's so many differing anecdotes, some even stretching into the status of legendary events or encounters with Enzo Ferrari that we're going to save for our future episode just on him. But for a little bit of spoiler alert here, he was infamous, for instance, for pitting his drivers against each other and playing psychological mind games with them. Like, this guy did a lot of strange stuff. And then eventually, after creating a world-changing automotive company and racing legacy, mm-hmm. He passed away. And he passed away in 1988, in August. And after you know, his passage, he was mourned by many people. Life well lived. He was 90 years old, which means that he did survive to witness the launch of the Ferrari F40.
Ah, but you know what? It wasn't until about 2002, so after his death, when the Ferrari Enzo, the Enzo Ferrari, I should say, came out, the car that bore his name.
Right.
So it never was in his lifetime that he was able to see the car that was named after him.
Well, you know, to be fair, Scott, that's something that happens more often than not, because it's kind of rare for someone to have the car bearing their full name come out while they're alive,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess. Well, a full name, that's unusual too, mm-hmm. instead of just having the last name. Now, of course, Ferrari, I mean, obviously all the way through. Chrysler mm-hmm. is another example. Ford, of course. Yeah, there's a bunch of those, right? So, to have the full name on there, that's pretty unusual. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a strange occurrence. But again, 2002, they built, what, 399 of these things, I think, with his mm-hmm. name on them. And they were selling for about, looking back now, this is, what a discount, right? About 700,000. Right? I think it was like 670,000 or mm-hmm. something like that. So seems like a bargain compared to some of the numbers we're hearing on supercars now. They built a 400th edition, or, you know, the 400th version of the Enzo Ferrari. And in the final year, I believe, and they donated it to the Vatican, and they auctioned that off, I think, for charity, of course, for I think it was like $1.1 million.
Crazy.
But here's where the tie-in is, right?
Uh-huh.
I think we know of a more valuable Enzo Ferrari now. There's one that was said to – it was going to go for about $10 million.
And which one is that?
That's Enzo himself, Ben.
Ah. Wait, Scott, you might be saying to yourself, wait, Ben, hold the phone. The buck stops here. What the heck are you talking about? What in the Sam Hill? Well, we will tell you after a brief word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And Ben, I had kind of mentioned that there might be a $10 million Enzo Ferrari out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's a play on words, I guess, but it's the man himself. And this is that really unusual story that came out at the end of March. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we're recording this, this is a news story, I guess.
Yeah.
But there, in the automotive news and elsewhere, you'll find it, you know, spread from, I don't know if it was an AP story or where it came from, or Reuters or something. Here's the headline. Italian police foil plot to steal Enzo Ferrari's body. Can you believe that? There's going to be someone now
yeah.
is going to steal the body in 2017 that was buried back in what?
88.
1988, yeah.
Yeah, 29 years later.
And the idea was that they were going to ransom the body back to the family. And I thought, man, that is really unusual. What a strange target for something like this.
Yeah, what a bizarre plan. When Enzo Ferrari passed away, he was buried in a cemetery in Modena, Italy. These investigators who discovered this were on the island of Sardinia.
Ah, yeah, and it was a gang, right? There's a gang that I think they're involved in,
drug trafficking, arms trafficking.
Oh, arms trafficking. That was the one. Arms and drug trafficking. You're right. And this led to a number of arrests because, you know, they had infiltrated this group. They were one of the people, I guess, you know, the good guys were in on it with the bad guys.
Yeah, it's like a sting operation.
Yeah, which is really cool. We hear about this happening a lot. So, you know, the plan is foiled at the last moment. They let them get right up to the point of, you know, taking action, and then they stop the whole thing. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, it's a strange target. I mean, it's understandable, I guess, you know, that this is a head of industry. This is somebody that, you know, you'd want to protect the remains. You know, keep the grave sacred, I guess, maybe. For a lot of reasons. I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why you wouldn't want, your loved one dug up and then ransomed back to you. I think anybody can understand that.
Right.
But this would be something that would almost be like a, well, I guess the whole nation would take notice of something like this. It wouldn't be just one family that's mm-hmm. Invested in this. It would be everybody would be like kind of shocked by this news.
Yes. So
as they were by this news story that came out. And again, it's very, very short. There's really not a lot of the details about the plot. But they do say that again, there have been a number of arrests made. I think it was upwards of 30. They said maybe 34 in some accounts.
Right, right.
So again, he's still safe where he was. He's buried in this, or I guess you'd say buried, but he's in an above ground family tomb that's in a cemetery in Modena, and I guess resting peacefully right now.
Right, because they were foiled before.
But I wonder if there's going to be future. Fortification to that above ground tomb.
Right. This is so what's fascinating in a very macabre way about this investigation is that these crooks, and they are crooks, ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake, they had apparently drawn up detailed plans, like the kind of stuff you would see in a heist movie, mm-hmm. Very Ocean's 11, about who's going to do what, about how they're going to steal the coffin, hide it, and then they'll contact the family. And they thought, well, if the family doesn't buy the corpse back, surely the automaker itself, the Ferrari, the entity, will buy it back. And they were...
With ample cash on hand, by the
with
way.
With ample cash on hand, of course.
They're asking for $10 million.
Right.
Or but they're planning to.
They're asking... Ultimately, they're asking from the company that builds some of the world's fastest and most expensive vehicles.
Yeah, sure.
So they probably would have the cash on hand if they chose to do that. And the strangest thing that we found in the research, like Scott, as you said, there's not much official information released. The investigators refused to disclose many of the facts. Mm-hmm. And typically in a criminal case, there are several compelling reasons for that. Usually if investigators are not revealing specific details of a case, it may be, depending on the laws of a country, because litigation is ongoing, mm-hmm. which means that there are things that have to be evaluated in a court of law. And then the second reason, which is even a little bit more disturbing, would be when the investigators suspect that there are people not yet apprehended.
Oh, yeah.
So we see this a lot, in murder cases, most famously in, serial murder cases where law enforcement doesn't want to disclose specific commonalities mm-hmm. between crimes, or in car theft rings as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So there's a very good chance that we're going to hear more about this soon because, that's the way things happen. I mean, as Ben said, they kind of – the information will trickle out as more information is available to the press, of course. We're going to hear everything that they have to say. There just is a question in my mind, though. Like why wait now? Why now? Why 2017? Why wait 29 years for this to happen? I mean, why didn't this plan – come about early on? Why didn't it happen
right.
in 1988 or 1990? Because there have been other plans like this throughout history that have either played out or come close to being played out within a couple of years of somebody's death. And
yeah.
some interesting characters, as we found out. Now, I've got a couple of those here in front of me, a few that have been robbed. We're going to try to tie a few of them into automotive terms, I guess an automotive world, really. Mm-hmm. And we can do that loosely in some cases. Mm-hmm. But others are just interesting. There's a bunch of them, of course. We're not going to cover all of them. There have been many celebrities or notable famous people that have been stolen from their grave. But there's one in particular that I think I'm going to hold back until the very end, Ben, to kind of tease you with this and say maybe you'll suspect this. I'm not sure. But there's an automotive-related one that I want you to know about at the very end.
Awesome. Yeah, and this is one that I may not know about. We talked about this off-air, and usually – so – another peek behind the curtain. Scott, usually when you and I are planning to do an episode, we will sit down here in the studio, and more often than not, one of us will say, I've got something special. I want to save it for the end. And we always offer, because we are actually friends off air, we always offer each other the chance to know what's coming up or to be surprised. And I don't know what choices you would make, ladies and gentlemen, but the choice I've learned that's always the best is if we choose to surprise each other.
Yeah, just wait till the end, and that's the way it's worked on this one. So you don't know anything about this one that's over here to the right, and I'll bring that one up at the very end, I promise. But let's just go through a few quick ones that are of interest or, and I'll try to tie in some automotive themes to some of these if I can. Not this first one, though. I can't do it. This one goes back to November 7th of 1876, and this is when a group of four counterfeiters broke into the Oak Ridge Cemetery in Springfield, Illinois, to steal, or the intention of stealing, Abraham Lincoln's body from his coffin.
Right, and their plan was that they would hold his remains for a $200,000 ransom in gold and the freedom of one of their compatriots, a fellow named Ben Boyd.
Yeah, now, that's very close to your name, Ben.
No relation.
Well, of course not. But the plan was they were going to take the body and they were going to hide it in the sand dunes in northern Indiana. Isn't that strange? That's a weird twist already. Mm-hmm. But it was foiled by somebody who was on the inside, somebody who had infiltrated this crew. And so when they broke into the cemetery that night, there were Secret Service agents already on hand who were investigating the counterfeiters at the time, which is... Well, of course, they were investigating. They had already infiltrated this group, but they were specifically in this group of four, mm-hmm. which is just unbelievable. But they were ahead of the game, so they already knew what was going to happen. And apparently there was an early gunshot that went off. Somebody errantly fired their gun ahead of time.
Sure.
Clued them into the fact that somebody's there watching, and the guys scattered. They left. But they were able to catch up to them a few days later, and arrests were made and all that. But... it led to the family realizing, okay, there's a danger here. There's a danger in his body being stolen and moved and ransomed.
Right.
So they did this. This is kind of strange. This is something that maybe not a lot of people knew about. Instead of being they kept it right there in the mausoleum at Oak Ridge, but instead of being in that sarcophagus, the above ground thing, they secretly hid the body in a shallow grave in the basement of the tomb. So, how weird is that? There's like a secret compartment underneath where the body was kept, and it was kept all the way until about 1901 when I think his eldest son, Robert Todd Lincoln, had his remains placed inside a steel cage and then lowered 10 feet into the ground and then covered in concrete for safekeeping. So they're serious about it.
I've got a couple of interesting tidbits about this if you'd like to hear them.
Oh, sure, yeah.
All right, so the reason they wanted Ben Boyd freed... this counterfeiting crew is because he was the good engraver, so he could make the actual plates. And the way that I heard the story,
yeah.
And this is not as verified as I would ordinarily like it to be, but the way I heard the story is that one of the guys who is planning to participate in this grave robbery had a little too much to drink. And he was in his cups and apparently trying to impress a lady he was courting.
Mm.
And then she heard about it. And apparently, I guess the relationship didn't work out because she's the one who told them.
Oh, she ratted him out.
Mm-hmm. And the only reason that the Secret Service was there at all is because very shortly before his death, Abraham Lincoln created the Secret Service.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So in a way, he avenged himself.
I didn't even think about that. And I think, what's funny? I think I read somewhere, too, and it might even be here, where at the time, the Secret Service was not strictly for – the Secret Service wasn't what we think of it as now.
No.
He created it to watch for counterfeiters. That's why that's why they were on this counterfeiter game, and the counterfeiters are the one going after his body. How strange a coincidence, right?
It's all of
this
a weird is, one.
It's amazing that it didn't happen, you know, that they didn't get away with this caper.
And, yeah, and grave robberies, as we learned in the course of our research here, happen way, way more often than you might think historically. We wanted specifically to recommend checking out some of our peer podcasts on the practice of resurrection men, right?
Oh, yeah.
Our friends over at Stuff You Missed in History Class. It's a fantastic show we've mentioned before, as well as, I believe, Stuff to Blow Your Mind mentioned the practice of body snatchers.
Yeah, yeah. Let's jump forward 100 years. How about
that? Let's go forward.
So 100 years forward, we've got the death of Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley is a guy that we have talked about several times on this podcast. Mm-hmm. He was a big car guy.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways, he's a big car guy. Especially later in life, he's an even bigger car guy. That's a fat Elvis joke.
Oh,
right there.
Scott.
A small fat Elvis joke. It was a terrible joke. All right, so talked about the cars of the king in September of 2014, and we also had what happened to Elvis Presley's hearse, which, that's one of my favorite episodes that we've done.
Yeah.
As far as, like, stories go. That's a great story.
And that was when you dug up.
It was somebody else who told the story, of course. Mm-hmm. I just found the information because I happened to go by the lot where they stored this thing. It's just a weird coincidence. A lot of that stuff happens around. It's strange how many times that happens to us. Mm-hmm. In the course of this podcast. So we're talking about August of 1977, and this is just 2 weeks after the king died. And, of course, I don't know if everybody knows this or not, but Elvis Presley had something like a 900-pound coffin. It was a steel and copper, a copper decoration on it, but it was a big steel coffin, very, very heavy. There was a plot, again, 2 weeks after his death. He was buried. He wasn't buried in Graceland. He was buried in a cemetery just down the road. I think the place was called Forest Hills Cemetery, and it's right outside of Memphis, in suburban Memphis. And there was this plan was hatched by three men, a guy named Raymond Green, Eugene Nelson, and then Ronnie Adkins. And so these guys were caught snooping around Elvis Presley's mausoleum. And now this is kind of strange. The plans don't seem to add up here.
Uh-huh.
Now they say they had a plan to do this, and they were going to ransom the body back again. We'll talk about dollar amounts in just a minute, but none of this really makes sense after this point. So it's like these guys had a bad plan to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So authorities are kind of staking out the mausoleum because they had heard this is going to happen. They didn't understand how they were going to get through two concrete slabs and a solid sheet of marble that covered the coffin, in addition to, this thing weighing 900 pounds, as I said before,
mm-hmm.
Itself, just the coffin, with the steel and or maybe it was iron. I can't remember if it was iron. Maybe it was even iron. But it was very, very heavy material. And it was steel-lined and then copper-plated, rather. They didn't take into account that they probably would need a forklift to get this thing out of the ground, to wherever they're going to take it, put it in a truck or whatever. But the story that this Adkins fellow, Ronnie Adkins, he's the one that they, questioned about this. The story that Adkins told them was completely full of holes. They said that each of those three guys was going to be paid $40,000 by this other criminal mastermind that was behind the whole thing, some unknown figure that none of them were naming. And the body was, again, this is another $10 million ransom. Kind of strange, that they would not really have a full set of plans when they go in there. I don't know if there was alcohol involved or what, but these guys didn't have maybe a full deck when they went there to carry out this plan.
Surprised? Are you surprised?
I'm not really surprised. No, I'm not. I mean, I guess maybe is 2 weeks enough time to really plan something like that, a caper that big?
Yeah,
a heist?
I found one story that was fairly recent, actually, is from this year, if you want to jump ahead even further.
Sure.
Just as a side note. So in California, there was a guy who accidentally became a body snatcher with no real intent to do so.
Well, how'd that happen?
I'm so glad you asked, Scott. So in February of 2017, authorities in California apprehended a man who had stolen a van from a mortuary. He just wanted to do common car theft.
Oh, no.
And then checked out the back of the van.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm laughing with like gallows humor
well,
here.
Well, yeah.
He checked out the back of the van and found out that it already had an occupant.
Oh, boy.
And so apparently for him, that was the line. He was okay with car theft, but he was not okay with, you know, stealing bodies. Uh-huh. He didn't want to be a resurrection man. So he returned the van. And this is a guy named Bobby Joe Washington.
Yeah.
He returned the van and then stole another vehicle because...
Well, he needed a car, right? Yeah. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. And the thing that I thought about this was whether or not this stuff gets reported because I know it's probably a rare thing, but it reminds me of these other redemptive stories that I've heard about criminals, for instance, you know, when somebody steals someone's wallet, but then they see like a picture of someone's grandmother in there and then the card for the hospital where she has all these medical expenses and they return it. That stuff happens, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people are committing crimes out of necessity and or out of what they perceive to be necessity and don't think of themselves as criminals. So I do want to say, don't steal cars, Mr. Washington. I think he's probably in jail. Don't steal cars, but good on you for having a moral and ethical line. Good on you for taking a stand.
A little bit of a moral compass there, yeah. Okay, huh? Just a little bit. Just a little bit. He knows which way is north.
Maybe. I don't
hey,
know.
Speaking of return, by the way,
yeah.
The Presley estate at the very end of this, you know, after this attempt was made,
yeah.
You know, again, just 2 weeks after mm-hmm. his death, those bodies, as you know, ended up at Graceland, and that's where, you know, you can walk past the graves and see them.
Mm-hmm.
Not just him. It was also his mother. His mother had died many, many years prior to that, his beloved mother. I mean, of course, you know his connection with his mom, mm-hmm. As we've talked about. But now, you know, those graves, you know, which are at Graceland, I think they're under a great big placard. There's a big marker there of some kind. I don't know if it's brass or what it is, but it's monitored 24 hours a day by staff and security. So, you know, there's no chance that anybody's going to get away with it now. Or I say there's no chance, but you never know, you know, the way these things work out. But don't you think now, this is funny. I never really thought about this because I just hadn't really given it much thought, really. Doesn't Elvis seem like the kind of guy that would have been buried in a pink Cadillac?
He seems exactly like the guy. If I had to make a list, he would be at the top of that list.
Yeah, because we hear about people that are buried in cars. You know,
sure.
That, well, there's Sandra West, you know, in mm-hmm. a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You should love that Ferrari. There are other people that are buried in cars that are more simple, I guess, more common.
People that are buried in Cadillacs,
yeah.
There are multiple examples
of
that.
Or just a beloved old Ford automobile or an Oldsmobile or whatever it is. You know, they want it. That's their last request. They want it. And it's usually, you know, quite an undertaking, I guess. to do something like that.
You're coming out swinging today, Scott.
Maybe. It's a strong game in some areas. But, yeah, there are certain people that are buried in cars, and I would just think that Elvis would be in a pink Cadillac. That would be his last request, but it wasn't. It wasn't the case. I mean, he had a relatively simple burial at that original place at Forest Hills. He never intended to be buried at Graceland, but he ended up there. It's probably smart that he's there, that he's able to be watched now, you know, by the staff and security, you know,
sure.
The security cameras. Other people could have benefited from that as well, I guess, because, well, here's one that in particular that is a famous one. I just want to go through a couple more of these.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll go faster through this one. This one has no automotive relation at all, really.
This is just a weird one?
Just a strange one, but Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
You read about Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah, yeah.
His body was actually stolen. This one actually – this kind of worked out for the grave robbers. He died on Christmas Day in 1977. He's buried right after that. And he had – I think he had another big coffin, like a 300-pound oak coffin. And he's buried in the village of Corsier, Switzerland. I hope I'm saying that right.
Corsier. Yeah, Corsier-sous-Vivet.
Yeah. Switzerland. And in March of 1978, so this is almost 4 months later, right?
Yeah.
4 months later, his grave was disturbed and his body was stolen with a demand for £400,000 received by phone. The grave robbers called his widow. His widow was named
Una.
Yeah, Una Chaplin, Lady Una Chaplin, and she refused to pay the sum of money, saying Charlie would have thought it rather ridiculous, which I think is funny. She kind of snubbed them,
right?
But so in an attempt to, because they found out who these guys were, local police set up, you know, a false payoff meeting, and those they didn't show up to that for whatever reason. They were scared or whatever. But the police and the suspects were both kind of persistent. You know, they both tried back and forth with, you know, we're going to meet up here, we're going to meet up there, and you know, they would duck out of the meeting, and say, you know,
yeah,
you know, that doesn't work for us for whatever reason.
They were squirrely.
Yeah, that's probably a better way to say it, a shorter way to say it. But finally, they were able to resolve this standoff by. They monitored 200 phone booths at a time, I think, at one point,
uh-huh.
To try to catch these guys, because they were using, of course, pay phones to call in back when pay phones were a thing. And finally, they were able to trace it back to an originating phone booth, and two auto mechanics were arrested. So, like, you know what?
It does have a little bit.
I guess, see, there it is. I didn't even remember the auto mechanics angle to this. So,
a little bit,
yeah,
of a
two
connection.
Auto mechanics were arrested, and they led the police to, you know, Charlie's remains, which were buried in a cornfield about 10 miles away from the graveyard. So they had successfully pulled this off outside of getting the ransom money. That's the tricky part, right?
And only a mile away from the Chaplin family home.
Oh, that's so really close.
So the another somewhat tenuous connection here between this and our title story is that the man who was considered the... I guess you'd say the mastermind of the plan, a fellow named Roman Wardas, who was from Poland. He told the investigators that he was inspired to perpetrate this robbery because of a story he had read in an Italian newspaper.
Oh, is that right?
So maybe there's a spate of Italian grave robbing crimes, you know?
Maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe. I mean, but that was more recent. I mean, March of 1978. So,
yeah.
Again, that's right around the time of Elvis Presley. I mean, that was the 1977 caper that was foiled. Or I keep saying caper, but I mean, I guess it would be a heist that was foiled. One last point on this one. On the Charlie Chaplin thing, they buried him in the same, you know, his coffin was buried in the same plot. However, this time they surrounded it with thick concrete to prevent anyone from disturbing the grave from that point forward. So you're going to find that's a common theme, that once there's this threat, then there comes this fortification of the tomb, so that, you know, it doesn't happen again.
And we do want to say this episode is not sponsored by any grave concrete concern.
No, definitely not. And, you know, okay, I think maybe that's maybe enough that I wanted to get to. There's one more quick one that I kind of want to mention, but really no detail is needed here. There's a different sort of grave robbery that happened, and it's not even really that. It's more like trying to meet someone's last wishes.
Okay.
And that was Graham Parsons back in 1973. There's a really weird story that goes with the death of Graham Parsons. Now, he had a really short music career, but the name is familiar, right? I mean, everybody's probably heard of Graham Parsons. He's known for his country and rock music, and he kind of blended the two genres together so that he's kind of like an early a crossover artist, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
In that way. And this happened all the way back in September of 1973, and the official cause of his death was an overdose. He overdosed on morphine and alcohol. He was mixing the two. And they said that, you know, the amount that he consumed would have been lethal to three regular users of morphine. So
Oh, wow. He
had quite a bit in his system, and it was really not a lot of mystery to about what happened to him there. I mean, that's you know, a given that it was, you know, he overdosed. There's no conspiracy behind any of that.
Right.
But his body disappeared from the Los Angeles International Airport while it was being readied to be shipped to Louisiana for burial. And the reason that it was stolen was because it was a friend of his, and I think the guy's name was Kaufman.
Yes.
And Kaufman, along with someone else, there's another character involved, they took him to a place in the Joshua Tree National Forest, or I hope I'm saying that right. The Joshua Tree,
the National Monument.
That's it, which he was
enamored with.
Yeah, especially the Cap Rock region of this forest, or this National Monument. And his last wishes were that his ashes were to be scattered over that region. So this Kaufman guy goes to the airport, borrows a hearse from somebody, I don't know who, steals the body, drives all the way out to the Joshua Tree National Monument. They get out to this Cap Rock area. They open up the coffin. They pour in 5 gallons of gasoline, strike a match, and let it burn thinking that they're doing the right thing, right? They're meeting his last wishes, because I think his Graham's stepfather had wanted him brought back to Louisiana for burial, but not knowing, you know, this is a young guy. He's only 23 years old at the time, or 26 years old at the time. He had a lot of musician friends and people that, you know, he'd already, been, he was good buddies with a lot of these people and told them his last wishes.
Like,
and, you know,
Emmylou Harris, Keith Richards.
Yeah, some big players in the music industry at the time. And they understood that his last wishes were a little bit more, unconventional, I guess, than what his stepfather wanted for him. And so his stepfather wanted to bring him back and have him buried in, you know, the family plot or whatever.
In Louisiana.
Yeah.
And there was some question about his motivations for that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it was inheriting his, well, the money from his career to this point, right?
Yeah.
He did have a recording career. Again, it was early on, but he had some success early on, too. So not a lot, but a little bit. But anyways, of course, this is a huge fireball that erupted from this thing. The authorities came right away, and apparently the two guys that caused this, just drove away because the police were kind of just overwhelmed by what they saw. Like they said it was just like grief overtook them. There's a burning casket there.
And there are also these the men who escaped were probably inebriated in one way or another. They were under the influence of something. But this story does have a little bit of a silver lining or happy ending for Parsons. He got his wish.
Yeah.
And his buddies who, you know, I think we all have friends who, with the best of intentions, are a little bit knuckleheaded, but they have hearts of gold, you know. So they sound like their motivations were pure.
Yeah, I think you can say that, sure. Yeah, I mean, the way that they went about it maybe was not the best way, of course.
Well, no, it clearly wasn't. And it clearly wasn't the best plan.
Yeah, but at the time, again, there weren't laws against that sort of thing. Which
exactly.
Because it wasn't that specific about that type
right.
of thing.
There were not laws on the books, believe it or not, about stealing a corpse. So these two guys do eventually get arrested a few days later. And since there's not a law against stealing a corpse at the time, they were fined, what was it, $750?
Yeah, for stealing the coffin. and they weren't prosecuted for leaving what was, you know, remaining of Graham Parsons in the desert, which, geez, that's an awful thing, too. I mean, what was left of him, I guess, was brought back to Louisiana to be buried.
So the stepfather got his wish in a way as well.
Yeah, I mean, in a way. It's a really odd tale. I mean, look into it if you want. There's more detail there that I'm sure we're skimming over. But, again, Graham Parsons, young guy, it was tragedy. Just check it out, and you'll see what I mean. Now, again, we're going to get to one more that is automotive related. This is the big one here at the end, and I think before we do that, maybe we should take a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Scott, this has been a rollicking and strange episode for Car Stuff. I'm enjoying it, and I have to confess, the entire time we've been doing this, I have been scooting closer and closer to the edge of my seat, and I've been playing back in my head the various things that I ran into. I give up. I have to ask you, what? I admit defeat. I do not know what this one is.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good. I kept the secret all the way to the end. Now, I wonder if anybody else is going to guess this, but we started out with Enzo, right?
Yes.
All right. And, you know, likely there's going to be some fortification to his tomb, you know, to make sure that doesn't happen, because someone's now got it in their head that they can go and do that. So likely there's going to be either somebody, you know, monitoring that grave or doing something to that grave. We've talked about, who was it? Abraham Lincoln, Elvis Presley, who, of course, is a big car guy. We thought he would be buried in a Cadillac. He was not. Charlie Chaplin, who, it turns out, there are two auto mechanics that were involved in the theft of his body, the actual theft of his body. That worked out for them. Grant Parsons, you know, he was carted across the desert in a stolen hearse, so that's kind of interesting. Or not stolen, a borrowed hearse, I guess. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe it was stolen, who knows. So this last one, this involves a character that we've talked about many times on this podcast, Ben. And I'll see if you can just guess maybe who it is now that I've given you that little clue.
It's not Henry Ford.
It is Henry Ford.
Man, are you serious?
Now, Henry Ford, however, no one stole Henry Ford's body. I want to get that out right out front.
Okay.
But he was prepared for this. And I'll tell you how. he has something called a mort safe that is built over the top of his grave. Now, this is something that I guess, knowing this character, knowing Henry Ford, he probably was thinking that he, you know, somebody was going to take his body for scientific purposes or something like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I would guess that that was his intention. I don't think that he would ever think that, you know, his body would be ransomed off to his family or anything like that. But he has something called a mort safe built over his tomb. Now, if you want to look at it, I mean, it's easy enough, you know, word search to do, and you can search Henry Ford grave or, you know, something like that, and you'll see this thing. I'm going to show you a photo of it, Ben. It looks like an ornate fence, maybe, that has gate of some kind. Maybe an ornate gate.
It looks in some ways like the metal grates that storefronts will pull over or pull down to the ground when they're closed.
Yeah, now, but it's horizontal across the ground. It's across the ground, really low, over this, you know, enormous grave marker, you know, the sarcophagus, I guess you'd call it, that has, you know, the engravings on it. And there's a stone bed beneath it as well, but it's a very decorative thing, right? And the idea behind this is it's an iron gate, really, that's laying flat just above the ground, maybe looks to me to be about a foot or a foot and a half off the ground. And then on the sides of this thing, there are bars, metal bars, you know, big iron bars that are driven down into the ground next to the sarcophagus so that anybody who were trying to dig around this thing would encounter those bars. They would have to still go through those bars, and it just becomes this really complex thing to get at, I should say.
Right.
So he and his wife are buried underneath this really decorative. It's actually, I mean, in a way, it's beautiful. It's very nice. This gate that is, it still gives you a view of the coffin, but one that's obstructed, I guess. But so isn't it interesting though that he would think ahead of time? I don't know if it would be his family that would think of this. It seems like something that Henry would direct himself.
No, that was all heavy F himself.
Doesn't it seem like that?
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is for both he and his wife, and this is right in Detroit. It's somewhere they say that it's wedged between a 4-lane busy boulevard and a small church. I never went to it when I lived there. I never went to go went to see this.
You never made the pilgrimage?
No, but you know, I mean, there's a lot of heads of industry that are buried in Michigan. In the, you know, I want to say, I think DeLorean is buried there in Detroit, Detroit area.
Detroit area.
I believe that Preston Tucker is buried there. You know, in various places, you know, different cemeteries, because there's some big ones there. But of course, Henry Ford is buried there. There's other heads of industry that are buried there as well. I know a lot are in Chicago, too, but, I just find this interesting. This is one you can go and visit. You can go and see. And it's a small cemetery. I guess they say it has about 50 or 60 graves, and most of them have the name Ford on them. It's a family cemetery. Mm-hmm. Most of them have the name Ford on them.
But only a few have the greats.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly right. And again, this mort safe thing is an interesting idea. It was invented in Scotland like 200 years before he ever died. So it's something that had been around. He had apparently known about them, you know, and he requested one.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it fascinating that he preemptively did this. You know, he knew that there was going to be something with that. Like somebody would either try to, you know, there'd be some mischief involved, I guess, after his death.
Scott, I have so many different tangents and directions and sidetracks that I want to explore, because this inspires me to investigate, you know. One thing that I would say about the context in which Henry Ford grew up, or the world into which he was born, was a world that's still a part of the world, at least in the U.S., that still had this social fear of being buried mistakenly, being buried alive.
Uh-huh.
And you can look back through, patent applications and see a wealth of different coffin designs that had stuff like a bell that that went through the coffin and through the ground to the surface.
Yeah.
So if you woke up after, you know, you had a fit of tuberculosis or something, you could ring the bell so you wouldn't be buried alive.
And they'd know to come back and dig you up immediately. So there had to be somebody, you know, there at the cemetery listening for the bells, right?
Exactly.
Oh, man. And I've heard of some that had, you know, breathing tubes, of course.
Right.
You know, what were some of the other really weird ones? I think the ones that had a periscope.
Yeah,
so that, you know, they could look and see if anybody was nearby to alert them. It's strange designs.
And the second thing that this immediately inspires me to think of is, okay, so we owe everyone a little bit of an explanation, including our super producers. Sorry, guys, we gave you the nicknames Burke and Hare, respectively, because Burke and Hare are two of the most well-known resurrection men who actually crossed the line into murder.
And you know what? I'm glad that you're bringing up resurrection men, because I wonder if Henry Ford, you know, because of the time that he lived.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was concerned with maybe not so much somebody ransoming the body back as he was with, you know, somebody maybe taking his body for medical science, you know, like, you know, the idea that – because he had kind of that strange connection with, you know, his early days, his early life, you know, I want to say like, you know, 19th century
right.
ideals, I guess, maybe is the way that he lived his whole life, really.
You know, and, that's not a crazy guess,
well,
either.
Well, maybe. I mean, I just wonder if it was, you know, instead of, you know, what we think of is, you know, like, well, somebody's going to take my body and ransom it back for $10 million. Maybe he was just thinking that, yeah, somebody's going to use it for medical purposes, and he didn't want that.
Well, this is...
Or disturbed in any way, really.
Yeah, this is a brief foray into some of the darker history of American medicine. But a lot of times for people who've heard of resurrection men, we tend to associate it with Europe, particularly the United Kingdom, where at the time in England, medical academies, for lack of a better term, were at a loss because the laws were in conflict. One could dissect a body, but it was illegal to procure a body, mm-hmm. right? But what a lot of people don't know is that this happened in the U.S. as well, and perhaps more recently than many people would think. There was a fellow named Charles Knowlton who was imprisoned in Massachusetts for illegal dissection in 1824. And Henry Ford, as we recall, was born in 1863. In 1878... the body of a guy named William Henry Harrison was snatched for a medical college in Ohio. And that we only really know of that one because he was the son of an Ohio congressman.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder how many stories Henry might have heard in his early years, especially, as you said, in the 19th century.
Well, that's the thing. He probably grew up with these stories in the newspapers, you know, that the graves have been disturbed for whatever reason, mm-hmm. and probably just stuck in his head, and that's why he did this. But it's an interesting idea, you know, that you would preemptively do this to your own grave. You know, that you would think, like, I'm going to protect myself even after. You know, it's a strange thought. It
and
really is.
So many body parts of celebrities and famous historical figures end up being misplaced or stolen because they function almost like relics or something.
I want to say, you know what, I don't have anything in front of me right now.
Sure,
but
sure.
There's something strange with Casey Kasem as well.
Really?
I think there was a story behind that, too. This happens often, you know, celebrities and people that are, you know, somehow famous, you know, whether they're singers or entertainers, actors,
sure.
whatever, you know, they tend to be the targets of this. And Enzo Ferrari is one, mm-hmm. because there was a lot of family money there, a lot of company money there, you know, two possible targets for the ransom there in that case. It seems like, you know, again, after the fact, a lot of people, you know, kind of wisen up to the idea that, yeah, this is something that's valuable, I guess. The remains of my loved one are valuable. I need to protect them in an extraordinary way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's going to happen with the Enzo Ferrari tomb. And we'll see. We'll see if it becomes more of a fortified structure than what it is now. I would guess that it would be, you know, sometime in the next month or so, we might even hear about it or see it, you know.
Right.
But I thought it was just an interesting tie-in, I guess, maybe to what we do here. It gave us a chance to talk about something a little bit different. I know we kind of touched on some of the stuff in the autonomous cars and the organ donation.
Oh, right.
So it's a little bit of an overlap there, but some fascinating tales to be told here. And I would bet that there are other automotive giants that have taken steps like Henry Ford to fortify their grave in some way that, you know, they didn't, you know, come under attack by grave robbers.
Right. And the thing that we do need to say is, of course, our thoughts are with the Ferrari family and estate, because that's such a bizarre and abominable thing to even contemplate. So
I wonder who's left.
Who's left?
Yeah,
there.
I wonder who's left in the Ferrari family.
That's a good question.
I don't know. I haven't looked into it. The surviving members. So so who's there to say we need to do this? Unless it's the company itself, you know, that says, hey, we got to protect our founder's grave.
Yeah, which very well may be the case. We know this episode may have been a little bit morbid, but we hope that you found it as fascinating. Is that a fair word, Scott?
Oh, sure.
As fascinating as we found it. And as always, we would like to hear some of your stories about the bizarre twists and turns of automotive legends. I know I've recommended it in the past, but we do find very weird Law and Order-esque plot twist to so many stories of automotive greats. In particular, I would like to recommend our U-Haul episode, which takes an unexpected turn. Now, I won't spoil it for you if you haven't heard it yet, other than to say, give it a listen when you're in the mood for, you know, how did I say earlier? Something Law and Order-y.
Yeah, it just takes an incredible twist.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah. Shyamalan-esque for sure. Yeah. So in the meantime, if you would like to check out any of the episodes that we recommended at the top of the show, you can visit us at carstuffshow.com. And if you would like to recommend a topic for a future episode or check out some of our stories that for one reason or another may not make it to air, you can find us at CarStuffHSW on both Facebook and Twitter. And if you're saying, well, Scott, well, Ben, I do want to see this stuff and I do have some great ideas that I think my fellow listeners should hear, but I'm not one for all that social media brouhaha, rigmarole, malarkey. It's all a fried bologna sandwich to me. Then we completely get it. You can write to us directly. We are
CarStuff at HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.